Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Cher Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. It's great to be here today. In today's show, we'll be talking about conscious compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and we'll be taking your calls. So keep it tuned here to World Talk Radio. Welcome to Open Air with Cher Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Good afternoon, Sherry. Sherry, are you there?
I am. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing very exceedingly well. And, you know, I always like to give a weather report from where I am.
Yes.
I've sort of taken this last week hard. You know, I understand the need for rain and all of that, but it's been as if someone is standing up above us with a hose on full blast.
Yes.
For many, many days.
Yes.
And then to add insult to injury, today it began to snow.
Wow.
Yes, which doesn't happen where we live, as I'm fond of saying to people, we don't live here because we want to experience snow.
Yes.
We drive to the snow. And now, for the first time in days and days, I think it's probably been weeks, I'm looking out the window at a patch of blue sky.
Wow.
Yeah, so life is good.
That's great. Mm-hmm. A little bit of sunshine there.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, whatever people want to talk about today.
Oh, good.
It's a radio call-in show.
It's a radio call-in show.
Yeah, so the way that works is that we are here, and then they call in, and we talk about whatever it is that they want to talk about.
Good.
Which is kind of fun, really.
It's great. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's fun for us, so
it's
I don't know.
Fun for us.
Maybe we should call in, or maybe that's your whole point. We should talk about what we want to talk about, but I would love to hear what's going on in other people's lives. It's just an enormous, gigantic time in the world.
Yeah.
There's just so much going on with, you know, just kind of in every direction that we look, the tsunami being probably right up there at the top of most people's lists, but we're still at war, and what little I know of that, it's not going well. And, you know, just a big time in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tends to affect how we do. Because as much as egocentricity would like us to believe we're separate, we're just not.
Yes.
And so when there are big things like this going on, we are all affected by it. And then it's interesting to see what we do with that. How we approach it. Is it something that conditioned mind takes and just immediately uses against us, or is it something that we're able to use for our own awareness and expanded consciousness? And so, you know, those are the things that interest me. So if anybody else wants to talk about that, of course, I'd just be ecstatic. And otherwise, you know, I'll probably just tell you more about the weather. And stuff like that. So if people want to save you from a fate like that, then they need to start pick up that phone and start dialing.
Yes. And that phone number is toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, 1-888-514-2100. If you want to call us from abroad, the number is 001, that's the country code, 858-268-3068. Sherry, your entreaties have worked, and we have a caller on the line.
Great.
I'd like to welcome Maggie. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Michael and Sherry.
You're calling in to save Michael from the fate of 1 hour of listening to me prattle on about
the weather.
Yeah, about the weather and whatever else catches my attention in the moment.
Yes.
Thank you. We're all grateful.
Yes, well, I'm grateful that you're there.
Good.
This last week, there has been so much coverage in the media on the tsunami disaster.
Uh-huh.
And there's been a lot of shows on like CNN, and they have various religious or spiritual leaders talking about their perspective. And one of the shows, I think on CNN, was something about where was God in the tsunami disaster. And everybody kind of spoke to their particular point of view.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw, not on that show, which was very interesting, by the way, but there was another show where this man, and I don't know who it was because I didn't recognize him, but he was talking from the Buddhist perspective. And he said that he saw it in terms of karma, and that these people that in some previous lifetime had done something that warranted sudden death.
Yeah.
And the interviewer said, you mean 175,000 people were all in the same place, all having the same karma? And the man said, yes. And this doesn't jive at all with...
You know, that's the kind of thing that gives Buddhism a bad name.
Yeah, you know, I thought that just seems so often. I wondered if you could speak to that.
Well, the first place, yes, I'd love to. The first place that I would look with that is how desperate we are for beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And how desperate we are to apply our beliefs in a way that enables us to have a sense of knowing and control. Now, I have never believed for a moment that what the Buddha was teaching is that in a past life, you did such and such, and therefore, in this life, this is what's happening. Now, the reason that that I've been pretty sure about that is that the Buddha did not talk about past lives. Because, of course, what he was putting forth is that there's no such thing as a separate entity, a separate soul, a separate being, that doesn't even exist, let alone that it would exist through time and space.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not to say that there isn't past life. And, of course, one could wonder how that could be.
Yeah.
But all that means is that there is a connectedness, an interconnectedness that enables us to be aware of everything that has made us up has participated in. That's not the same as there is a separate you, a soul, a person, a constant that's going from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime, reaping the benefits and the unfortunateness of what you did in another life. Okay, so the thing that he's teaching is that it's impersonal. So if we were to take this to a physical level, there was the physical movements in the earth that resulted in this giant wave that was so destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I hope nobody would say, well, clearly, in a past life, the earth has done something really wrong. And the result of that is that this thing happened to it, and then this was the result of that. I mean, I think we would agree that that would just be silly.
Right.
And yet, things lead up to things. Even though every moment is complete unto itself, if you go out into your garden and you're going to plant flowers, but you don't really understand how the whole thing works, and so you just kind of, you know, dig a little on the top there, and then, you know, dig far enough to put the seed in, and you put the seed in, and you put some water on it, and then you go off, and several things could happen. One, you forget that you put the seed in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you don't go back and water it again. Well, what's going to happen? Or maybe you remember and you water diligently every day. And these are all causes and circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you remember every day and you go out there and water it. Now, of course, you could be overzealous and drown it. You drown the seed before mm-hmm. it has a chance to ever sprout.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you're given it a perfect amount of water, and so the seed sprouts and begins to grow, and it runs into rock because you neglected to dig down far enough to accommodate the roots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is any of this the fault of the seed or the fault of the flower? No. We don't even have to say it's the fault of you. It's circumstances. All of these things came together, and this is, in this moment, the result of that. Mm-hmm. You with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am.
So, you know, I was kidding with somebody earlier that I have long speculated that igniting, or however you would want to say that, nuclear blasts inside the Earth might not be a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you have a basketball and you put a stick of dynamite in it, you know, it's not going to do well.
No.
And even though the stick of dynamite we're putting in is of a different size and that sort of thing, and this isn't a basketball, it's an Earth, it still seems to me like it's a shaky premise that you can take something that's relatively solid and start, setting off giant blasts inside of it and think that there will be no result.
Yes.
Now, I'm not a scientist, so that could be a completely wacko perspective. But
it makes sense. No, it makes logical sense.
I would like a scientist to explain to me how that doesn't have any effect. And so, back to your question. So I do not hold that belief. It's a cultural belief. I don't think it has anything to do with what the Buddha taught. And it's unfortunate that people are putting that forth. Now, given that that's my opinion based on nothing, okay, I'd like to take a step beyond that because other people have asked me questions similar to this, and my response to that is I don't have a belief in God. I don't think there is anything outside of life making decisions about life. I think life is God, and as far as I can tell. I have no evidence of anything other than that. The intelligence that is life, and it's not even that it operates life; it is life. Pardon me?
I concur. That's my feeling too.
And life moves along as it moves along, and human life is a part of life. Now, if I were going to believe in something like a God that's external, that is other, that is making decisions about these kinds of things, then rather than seeing human existence as the be-all, end-all, and losing that existence as the most tragic thing that can happen to a person, if I were going to have a belief in God, then this is what I would have decided about an event like this. As it must be that those people had completed whatever they were here to do. And so in the same way that, we're not heartbroken that James Bond doesn't get to stay on that island forever with that gal from that movie because we know he's going to be back. And there will be another gal and another set of circumstances, and it will be just as exciting and just as romantic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why not look at human incarnation that way? So somebody gets finished with an assignment, they go back to headquarters, they get another assignment. And so rather than seeing it as a terrible, horrible, punishing thing, what if it's simply they're finished? And one day, somewhere, sometime, we'll be finished, each of us will be finished, and we'll go back to headquarters and probably get another assignment.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe, though, that there would be 175,000 people all in one area that were all finished at the same time.
Well, but why not? It's as reasonable as anything. So if you are going to have you're going to complete an incarnation, then why not simply have that incarnation in a location that's going to enable you to finish it quickly and easily?
That's true. That's true. And maybe to send a message or give an opportunity for those of us left still to look within and find that compassion and that sense of being one with the world that is so lacking in our world.
Oh, I am right there with you. What does it take to get a group of people to wake up?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what people are doing with this. As far as I can see, it's a giant media exploitation opportunity, and perhaps that's a cruel and jaded perspective. I don't know. And what we see is a bunch of people who seem to have been interested primarily in reality TV and shopping, because that's what the country has been up to recently, as far as I can tell. And that's not to say that there aren't a lot of wonderful things happening with everybody all the time.
Mm-hmm.
However, to get us to pay attention, to wake up and pay attention and to consider life and what we're doing and how fragile it is and what's happening with people in another part of the world. I mean, if you stop and think about it, horrible things are happening to people all over the world every moment of every day.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of people are dying needlessly all over the planet every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes something of this magnitude to cause people to go, oh, wait a minute. You know, really tragic things can happen. So do you know that story that Stephen Levine tells about God and Jesus trying to figure out what it's going to take to get people to wake up?
No.
They're walking around heaven, and they're, you know, they're brainstorming and going back and forth, and maybe this, and maybe, you know, maybe if we did this, or maybe if we did that, and finally God stops and just hits himself on the forehead and goes, I got it, I got it. Jesus said, what? Nuclear Holocaust. Okay? So, you know, in our practice, we say we get hit alongside the head with the size board we need. So, I don't know. I don't claim to know. I don't claim to second-guess God. You know, I have my own little speculations. As I say, I don't believe that this is intentional or volitional, or I don't believe that life is punishing. I have no experience that life is punishing. You know, that we're rewarded when we do something that God likes and bad things happen to us when we, you know, that feels very parent-child to me. So I figure my job is to be as awake as I can in every moment, bring as much compassion as I can possibly muster to every being that I come in contact with, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can look at something like this and say, well, what can I do? You know, I'm clear across the world. You know, I can send some money, but what can I really do? Well, as you kind of indicated, what I can do is know that the human life, the life of the person standing in front of me is just as fragile and just as brief, perhaps, as those in that tragedy.
Yes.
And so what I can do is be just as compassionate and kind and caring of that person as I can possibly be.
And myself.
Yes.
Well, what is the karma, then, that the Buddha does talk about? You know, I am born to karma, heir to karma.
Well, I think what he's talking about is that we didn't, you know, it didn't just start today. You know, we are the sum total of everything that it has taken to produce us since before the beginning of beginningless time. I think that's the big point that the Buddha was teaching that we tend to miss. And that, ooh, I hear the music in the background.
Yeah.
And
are they playing me off?
That is that we are all of it. All of it. I don't look at somebody and say, who are you? I don't know anything about you. How could you be that? We are all of it. We're just focused on something in particular in this particular incarnation.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. That was a great question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Maggie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're at the end of our first segment here, and we'll be right back after this break. Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Coming up in our next segment, our second segment of Open Air with Sherry Huber, we'll be continuing our conversation about conscious compassionate awareness. So keep it tuned here to World Talk Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Cher Huber on World Talk Radio. We've been talking about the tsunami some in our first segment. And Sherry, we have another caller here.
Excellent.
Great. I'd like to welcome Lisa. You're on Open Air with Cher Huber.
Hi.
Hey there.
Hi. thanks for talking.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I was calling because, well, I've just been really looking at peace lately and my relationship with peace and where I'm at with it. And I guess what I was wanted to kind of talk about was about trusting peace,
huh.
At least trusting the experience of peace,
uh-huh.
Or letting go into peace, I guess I would say. Because I've been noticing lately that there will be times when when I will not choose peace. And it's been really interesting to me because I'm a person who likes to consider herself peaceful or peace-seeking. And then there are certain times where I just notice that that I'm able to just kind of see peace as a choice and just not trust that it's going to work.
Uh-huh. Can you say a little bit more about that work part of it?
I guess just that it won't be all right. I won't be all right if I let go into peace. That I'm still going to need to hold on to that little bit of, you know, anger, or hold on to that little bit of distrust. That I need that rather than just letting the peace. I mean, my best, clearest expression of that could be maybe like driving in the car, you know, and there's someone who's cutting you off, and you could just kind of, I could just let go, you know, and just, okay, someone cut me off. But it just seems like I'll see the choice of just letting go into peace there, and then I'll just, no, I have to.
No, because what's going to stop them from doing that the next time if
right.
I just... And casual about it.
Right, and it's kind of like, you know, I could let go into peace here. I could do that, but, you know, I'm not going to, you know,
So you have to have your standards. Now, let me ask you this. Are there times when you just let it go?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, see, here's my speculation on this.
Uh-huh.
That is that in the times when it's easy, during those times, it's because you don't have anything going. So you're just,
huh.
That may be a good mood, but, you know, so you're going along down the road and you're in a good mood and life is good and
mm-hmm.
somebody cuts you off and you just go, well, God, I'm not in that kind of hurry.
Right.
And you just, okay. Then there's the time when you're tense, you're stressed, maybe
uh-huh.
you're in a hurry, you're in a bad mood, but you're trying to be a good sport. You know, you're trying to do the good, perhaps we could say Zen, person of Zen thing with it. You know, it's okay,
right.
I can handle it, it's all right, then somebody cuts you off and you just want to kill them.
Right.
Okay? So, to me, that's more the direction to look.
Uh-huh.
It really doesn't have much to do with peace.
Right.
It has to do with, what am I not attending to within myself?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think if we took that out to sort of a nationwide level,
right.
The same thing happens, right? People are going along, they're neighboring countries, and, you know, this happens, and it's okay, and then this happens, and, you know, there's growing resentment and, you know, a little bitterness here and there, but it's okay, we can handle it, and then something happens, and it's, you know, the last straw.
Right,
And people are bombing each other. And you're
right.
Like, now, where did this come from? And it's from those millions of little things that weren't really acknowledged.
Right, right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, I definitely think that this, I mean, that experience, I think, repeats itself in bigger scales in my life. Do you know what I mean? With
yeah.
bigger relationships than just somebody I don't know cutting me off in the
yeah.
traffic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and the closer the relationship, the the more opportunity for resentment there is.
Right.
Right. So, you know, it's okay. You know, she didn't mean, he didn't, you know, it's all right. You know, we're rationalizing and stuffing and rationalizing and stuffing and denying ourselves and denying our own experience
right.
until I'm out of here. I can't take it anymore.
Right.
You've been mistreating me for years.
Really?
Why didn't you say something? Well, you knew what you were doing.
Right. Yeah, but I definitely do think that there is a certain amount of a trust element to it, because the letting go of it, it just feels kind of like, I can't explain it, just letting go into peace.
Yeah, see, to me, what you're looking at with that is sort of the fundamental issue of awareness practice.
Right.
Ego is a survival system. It defends, it fights, it watches, it criticizes, it judges, it, you know, keeps score.
Right.
Okay. Now, when you're happy, you don't actually need ego.
Right.
So you're going along and you're centered, and there's no room for ego. It's going to die if you continue to be centered.
Uh-huh.
So I would suggest that it's ego who is giving this information about you can't trust it.
Mm.
Because if you could trust it, why would you need ego?
Right.
If you could really trust life, why would you need to be defended? Why would you need a survival system?
Yeah.
Why would you need to be keeping score and judging and criticizing and comparing?
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, there are times when you know, gossip and just, you know, not nice comments are just streaming out of my mouth, you know, when I'm sitting next to somebody and we're kind of having a bull session and, you know, and I'll be like, what am I doing? How is this helping, you know? And then, but then I just kind of keep, you know what I mean? There's like that glimmer and then it's just like, so much easier to just kind of do
what
this.
What you're bringing up, though, is a really interesting point, because you see the two choices you have are to let that energy out.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's a valid argument for questioning whether you're letting it out or building it up.
Mm.
Okay? But your two choices are to let it out through ranting and raving to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Or what? You just stuff it?
Well, that would be the right thing to do, right?
Yeah, right. Well, from
people
ego's
just stuff it all the time, right?
Yes, from ego's perspective, it's definitely the right thing to do because it's leading directly to the explosion.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that doesn't seem good. As a matter of fact, we were just doing that ranting and raving thing in my office right before the radio show because it's a completely insane time. Maybe it is everywhere in the world. I don't know. But it's way too busy. And, you know, the 4,000th phone call of the day, when answering all those phone calls was not on my daytimer schedule of what I was going, okay? And it's the same for everybody in the place. And so we stand there for 5 minutes and go, I hate this. This is miserable. Why are you anywhere? You know, and then walk off and go back to answering the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's not inherently difficult because I don't see being in touch with the way I feel and expressing it as necessarily unpeaceful.
Hmm.
You with me?
Yeah, I am.
Resisting it, okay, expressing how I feel and feeling bad about it.
Right.
Feeling guilty, expressing how I feel and believing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel this way because you did that, you said that, and that was blah, 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 blah. You know, that's the expressing it that's really adding wood to the fire.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Huh.
But that idealizing flatlining, to me, is the direct result of the way we're socialized as children. You know, children are socialized out of any emotion.
Right. Right.
And then that becomes the ideal. Then that, it gets called peaceful.
Right, right.
But that's not a peaceful I'm really interested in.
Right. Right.
Yeah, because I'm a really emotional person.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if I have to give up that in order to be peaceful, no, that's too big a trade-off.
Right.
But if I can be peaceful with the way I am, if I can express myself in ways that are not hurtful, that are appropriate, why wouldn't I want to do that? I'm a human. I'm a sentient being.
Right. Well, that's very interesting.
You know, I could see, I could see, you know, the person cuts you off and you watch that part of you rise up, and then you, you know, you can just do all sorts of things with it. You know, you can sing a song about, you know, an ode to people who cut people off in traffic. You can, you can swear in all the foreign languages that you know. You know, all sorts of things that you do with conscious awareness. You're
right.
Not identified. You're not.
Right.
You know, you're not perpetuating karma. You're not believing that this is real and true. And you're also not becoming some sort of an automaton that you label Buddhist.
Right, right. Right.
I don't know. I don't know where that got added in.
What, being flat?
Being flat.
It's that.
In fact, a woman interviewed me yesterday afternoon for a parenting magazine, and this is essentially what we were talking about. And in the course of the conversation, you know, she's from that school that says, you know, you must never show any emotion around your child because it will upset them. And
right.
I said, you know, I just picture being a little child watching this very big person who's like a volcano. You know, there's just all this stuff going on inside. And the person is saying, now, what we're going to do now is, and I thought, you know, that would be totally
right.
terrifying to me.
But I think probably that's where it comes from. I mean, the parenting woman and myself, it's because we saw, you know, in our childhoods we have experience, and just everywhere, I think everyone has an experience of that very out of control, scary anger that is directed toward you with a mean, you know, with mean-spiritedness
behind it. I don't think that that's what's operating us.
Really?
I really don't. I don't think that that's what we're responding to.
Huh.
No, I think that that's the, you know, that creates the part of us who reacts that way.
Right.
Yeah, but the being afraid of it, I think, is a direct transmission from everything in society that says emotion is scary.
Right.
So, you know, there's a difference. If you had been around adults who were just, say, Italian, my favorite example, you know, who are just emotive. That's all.
I have an Italian mother.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about dinner, and you
right.
think that they were going to come to blows at any moment.
Right.
They're just excited. They're not upset. If you're around that kind of energy, that's
uh-huh.
one expression of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's violent, that's not. We're not really talking about expressing emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you know, when people try to distinguish between rape as a sexual crime and rape as a violent crime. Rape is not a crime of a sexual crime. It's a violent crime. You with me? Hello?
I think we may have lost her.
Oh.
Wow. Lisa's gone.
Wow. Well, maybe Lisa will come back.
Maybe Lisa will.
Because I was getting really quite emotional in our conversation. I have a lot of energy built up here.
Yes, I can hear that. And it is fascinating talking about flatlining and expressing emotions.
Oh, having emotion.
Yeah.
Being alive. My
yeah.
God. You know, we're, I don't know what the statistics are now, but the World Health Organization, this was several years ago, talked about by 2020, depression would be the biggest non-communicable killer of people in the world.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, we in this new good old United States, you know, depression is just, it's an epidemic. I don't know when things move from epidemic to pandemic, but, you know, we got to be pushing the edges of that.
Yeah.
And yet people are terrified to express emotion. Well, if you're not expressing life force, you're depressing it.
Yes.
And the natural result is to be depressed. So,
yes.
You know, I wish we would get lots more expressive and at least half of that expression would be joyful.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're at the end of our second segment here. Keep it tuned, and we'll be back after this break.
coming up in our third segment of Open Air. We'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Cher Huber on World Talk Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Cheri Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Cheri, I want to mention just two quick housekeeping things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our email address. If you have a question you want to email us, the address is openair@livingcompassion.org. Again, that's openair@livingcompassion.org. And I also wanted to mention that archives of all of our shows are available right here where you're listening to us now, which is at worldtalkradio.com. And Cheri, we have another caller.
I love that.
Busy here. I'd like to welcome Michael. You're on Open Air with Cheri Huber.
Hello there.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hi. That first caller about asking about the tsunami and the deaths is, that's on everybody's mind tonight. Really appreciate your answer to that. The last caller was talking about road rage, which reminded me of a book that I think all of our listeners might enjoy, and it's called Honku, H-O-N-K-U. It's subtitled The Zen Anecdote to Road Rage.
Can you give us the Reader's Digest on that?
Yes, I can. Have you heard of the book?
No.
Well, this gentleman a couple of years ago lived in Brooklyn, and he had an apartment. And he was in an extremely noisy neighborhood where people just honk the horns all the time. And one day that he heard outside his window, somebody was honking the horn continually, and he snapped. He went to the refrigerator and got some eggs and went to the window and threw the eggs on the car.
Oh, dear.
Well, the guy in the car just jumped out and started screaming, you know, all sorts of things at him, including, "I'm going to come back and kill you."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the guy in the apartment decided, this is not so good. He started writing these haikus in the form, and called them honkus, and hanging them around the neighborhood. And everybody really got into it, and it just changed the entire environment. And so he published a book of some of these honkus.
And the title of the book again is?
It's Honku, H-O-N-K-U. That's the title of the book.
Uh-huh.
And they're just... I think he's even got a web page now where people can go out and put their own honkus out there. I'm going to read you one from the front of the first one in the book. It says, "There are only three types of drivers, the morons, the insane, and me." And I just can't resist one more. Is it profiling to say dude in the Hummer is an idiot? Isn't this wonderful? Now we could take out, I can't resist. Once you see, it's like eating potato chips. guy in SUV throws gum wrapper out window. I throw it back in. Ooh. But evidently, it just changed the entire environment in the neighborhood, and it just, you know, lightened the whole thing up.
Good, and we can guess, based on this, that the fellow didn't come back and...
No, he didn't.
...track the source of those eggs and do him any damage.
Yeah, and the author of the book says that once he started this, it hit the media trifecta. He said that he got an article in the New Yorker, the New York Times, and on NPR, so...
And now
it's going out, you know, over your radio broadcast, so...
That's right.
Yeah.
We're doing our part to spread the word.
Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm.
I have one more little quick question, because I have a friend that I've been friends with for about a dozen years. He's a retired systematic theology professor, and we have been exchanging letters for a dozen years. And here recently, I did an extract of our letters, and I have really been involving him in my life as I, you know, and we all have life experiences that are... not that we would wish. Anyway, so I sent him a 25-page letter, an essay that did extracts from our letters, and he wrote back. And, of course, he knows that I started out when I first knew him, and I called myself a Christian, and now I call myself a Zen Buddhist.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And he wrote back, and he said, our relationship is not as theological as I would like. What are your reasons for becoming a Zen Buddhist? And my reaction when I got the letter the other day was total panic. But then,
and based on what? If you're not a Christian, he doesn't want to relate to you?
No, it was based on, I discovered this 3 years ago when I was on There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat. I have a 12-year-old inside me who gets absolutely panicked over the question of belief because he grew up in a church that told him if he didn't have the right beliefs, he was going to go to hell when he died.
Mm-hmm.
But to make a long story short, I got over that panic, and now I'm just tremendously excited because I'm going to be able to write to him and talk to him about this awareness practice that I'm involved with.
Uh-huh.
But, so I guess what the only thing, do you have any comment when somebody, I guess people who get involved in anything that's not mainline understanding in this country, say, and I've experienced this with my family, they think I'm worshiping the devil or something. No, he doesn't think that because he has been involved in a Buddhist-Christian theological discussion group for a dozen years, and he even has gotten to the point, and he says, I don't understand. And in other words, he says, the difference between my Christianity and the Buddhism of my Buddhist friends, it seems to me the same, and if there are any differences, they must be very subtle. And this guy is extremely analytical and logical, so if he thinks they're extremely subtle, they must be.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm.
Anyway, I think...
Well, you know, the difficulty that strikes me is with this, and,
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting with your friend, and you get to explore all of these things, but... there are just so many of everything. You know, if you were to say he's a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a Buddhist,
yeah.
What the heck does that mean?
I know exactly. It doesn't mean anything until
you. It really doesn't.
It really
does. You know, somebody was claiming that all of those people died in the tsunami because of bad karma from another, you know, from a previous existence, and that. I don't recognize that as Buddhist at all.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, and there are people who would say, you're going to go to hell if you don't believe exactly this, and that doesn't sound like that was your Christianity or this fellow's Christianity.
Yeah. Well, it was the Christianity I was raised with.
Right, but I think you grew out of that.
Well, it yes.
It's not the Christianity that you experience now.
No.
Yeah. So that's you know, it's interesting. It's always, I think we forget
yeah.
that all we're ever talking about is our own experience or our own beliefs.
Exactly.
And even you know, this I guess there's a move afoot to get this labeled a Christian nation. You know, again, I'd have to go to what does that mean?
what
are we going to have to? I think what people would have to do then is come up with a definition of Christianity, and I could see all-out war
yeah.
being the result of that.
Well, I mean, that's what happened in Europe. The 30 Years' War was about that. Oh, well, let's not... Anyway, I'm looking forward to my discussion with my friend.
Yes, well,
yeah.
Let us know how it comes out.
I will. And
because
I highly...
then you could work on a lot of other issues together, resolve a lot
yeah.
of things.
Well... he's got such a keen mind that I want to talk to him about these other issues. I think this issue of, you know, what's the right religion is not profitable. And I think he would, well, I'll find out if he agrees
with me. Well, not what's the right religion, but
exactly.
To me, what he was asking you was something so much more interesting than that.
Yeah.
How do you see life? How does this play out for you? What are you seeing? What are you doing in your life that is working for you, that makes sense out of these things for you?
Yeah.
Because when we argue, you know, Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and he came to earth to redeem you, and, you know...
Well, that's exactly what...
How can you ever talk about that? You know, I mean, there's just kind of nowhere to go. There's, okay, you believe that, okay, I don't. So, but if we talk about, you know, what does that mean to us?
Yeah.
What does that mean for life? What do you, I mean, there's somewhere to go with if it becomes a, your own experience.
Yeah. I've got hung up a long time ago on a statement by another fellow who said that, you know, every religion or ideology in the world has always been focused on the wrong thing, and the most important thing are the primary concerns: food, clothing, shelter, love, education, those things, which I fully support. Anyway, I'm looking forward now to talking to my friend about all this.
Yeah, hear what he has to say.
Yeah, and I highly recommend the Honku book.
Yes! Yeah. Yeah, as we're driving along, it'll give us something to do.
Absolutely.
Write our own Honkus.
Yeah. Well, good talk to you.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. This is Michael Gray, and we are at the end of our show here, Sherry.
Well, it's been lovely.
It's been lovely, and we'll do it again next week. And if you want to reach us in the meantime, please send us an email to openair@livingcompassion.org. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Bye.